Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have fabulous Ellen Connolly Tafe with me this morning. Let me tell you a little bit about Ellen. She is a clinical associate professor at the Kellogg School of Management, where she teaches personal leadership insights, and is the director of the Women's Leadership Program. She spent 25 years with Fortune 500 companies, holding top brand management posts with divisions at PepsiCo, Royal Caribbean, been on Royal Caribbean cruises, and obviously that marketing worked there for me, Whirlpool Corporation. Ellen serves as an independent board director for two public and one private company boards. She runs leadership advisory, consulting, speaking, and coaching business, and is a TEDx speaker. She shares her insights on leadership, careers, and advancing women and inclusion through her writing and speaking in media like Harvard Business Review, Forbes Business Insider, and more. Wow, that is very impressive, Ellen. Thank you very much for being here. Welcome.
So glad to be with you, Janine.
The component behind what that's saying is you're here to speak on behalf of women and to assist them to be great leaders. I got all of that right. That's your space.
Absolutely. I mean, the class that I teach regardless of gender, but my passion is around advancing women for sure, and helping them navigate their careers.
It is a trick, isn't it, for women? I know I've worked as a GM of a multi-million dollar company, as well as having my own business. And I just noticed how different it is for women, and have noticed it for women compared to men in those roles. My generation is, we're talking 10 years ago for a 20-year period prior to that. So that's quite a bit of a different space. Is it different now for the women coming through?
You know, I think the women that are coming through now are very ambitious and want to build their careers, but they want to do it in a bit of a different way, in having a bit more of a life in some ways. And I also think that, more women are coming out of colleges and MBA programs than ever before. And they're ready to go and are finding themselves surprised by what they're seeing or facing sometimes. That the surprise for me has been that they are facing some of the things that I did some years ago. So there's a lot of opportunity to create some different places in our, in our work cultures, and there's a lot to navigate.
It's interesting, isn't it? I noticed the ghost behind you opened your door, and
so, yes, the ghost is my dog.
They don't like missing out on anything at all. That's great. So the wanting the better life balance, which is something I know with my generation, you just were told you have to, if you wanted to achieve, you had to work harder and be smarter and do things better than men, so that you would be recognized to fill that position, which is really hard then to create a work-life balance. Is that realistic now? Is that something that, the women feel they have to compete again now, or in this era?
I think it's less about competition, because I would also say I think men want a different workplace too. And so frequently, I think it's the younger generation that is saying, hey, we do want big jobs and a, you know, a big life, but we want to do it in a different way. That's you know, my perspective, I would say, from MBA students. But you know, you see it in the latest McKinsey Lean In report of women being ambitious. I think it's up to like 81% of women say they want to get to the next level in the next year. But and that was 70% just in 2019. So there's definitely this, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I want more, but I also recognize this other side too. And I think the changes that many women want also benefit men too. Yeah. And some of it comes up with work from home and other things like that as well.
And that was going to be two questions within that. One is that it achievable and realistic? And I know in Australia, we've had, you know, everyone adjusted in 2020. We were working from home a lot more, but I know a lot of workplaces now want people back in the workplace because of the mental health issues and culture and a whole lot of other components of that. So there's two parts in it, because tell us where you're based, Ellen.
I'm in Chicago.
Looking at it from that American perspective as the working from home, but also, is it realistic to expect that you can have that balance in life?
You know, I think it remains to be seen. It depends on the workplace. I think a lot of times work from home can work depending on what the work is, but I do worry about mentorship and the relationships that we build at work. I think that the CEOs who are calling for people to come back to the office are particularly worried about how do they get to innovation and things that take a lot of collaboration, which I think that can be done virtually. We've shown ourselves that, but I think that, you know, so frequently people feel like it's better if we can do it in person, or at least do it in person some of the time. You know, so I think the balance of power, if you will, between the employers and employees seems to keep adjusting. I would say the research says that most younger employees want some amount of work from home. But you know, I think we'll see over time, in particular for women who take more of the work from home and flexibility, do they lose out on promotions based, you know, that are influenced by more face time? So I think time will tell as well.
That's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought about that with the, if you're not being seen in the workplace other than online or on a Zoom call, then you don't have the same opportunities. That's a really interesting concept. Sort of makes sense a bit, doesn't it? Because you're not front and center.
I think it's a little bit of a fear that, you know, we have some of the highest participation of women in the workplace, I think, because they have more flexibility, and the hope is that will continue. The fear is that, well, what happens if they're doing it in a way that they don't get as much mentorship, you know, that FaceTime, or, you know, be known and be on, you know, seen for what they're accomplishing, what they want to do. So we'll see. I do worry about that. I worry, you know, I have two young daughters, one's in college, one's 24, working from home. And she has an assigned mentor that she meets with quite a bit. But, you know, it is, when I think back to my own career in corporate America and some of the deep relationships that I had that helped me to get things done, that also served to be their friends now, you know, we've gone on to different places. So, you know, it's a different world for young people today also that I think we're going to navigate and see, and there's probably some amount of course correction that's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. It proved that the world can just change in an instant, and we need to. I was talking that word last night. It was not my favorite word in 2020, but I work with a lot of people in their own business, and they had to absolutely pivot in what they were doing, because what they were doing did not exist. One moment it did, and the next moment their business did not exist. And changing it from what they were doing. Now, talking, you mentioned that you had daughters. What got you into going out of corporate and then doing what you're doing and teaching? What's your space behind that?
It was a two-step move. So after 25 years in corporate America, I joined a small boutique consulting firm that I had been their client when I was at Whirlpool. And I joined them, ran that organization as the two owners were retiring and eventually sold the company. So I was there for 5 years. And in that role, we did a lot of market research, and I felt like I was working with many executives who got bad market research results sometimes and struggled to communicate that to senior management. And I felt like I was coaching some of our clients on how do you share some of this? And I got, and that was like the start of like, I really love advising and coaching and helping. And, you know, that's when I joined my first board. I became an executive coach and did the training behind that. But when I left that organization, I found that I did love coaching, but I didn't like the business of coaching. That was harder for me. And my alma mater, Kellogg, was starting a women's leadership program. And it happened at the same time, you know, I had my daughters, you know, seeing the opportunities for them, but I found myself to be the only woman on three boards.
Okay.
And I was starting to speak on panels to try to get more women on boards and honestly sort of waking up late in my career and realizing, wow, I'm the only woman in the room. That's how I started my career in the 80s and things hadn't really changed as much. So when I heard about this Kellogg opportunity, I was like, I would love to do that. I, you know, it would be a new thing. I was a leader and I was a coach, but I learned to teach leadership and dug into a lot of the research to be able to create what was the programming we would do. I run a women's leadership seminar series for MBA women. And so it led me, I know you don't like the word pivot, but it was quite a change.
I haven't heard it for a couple of years, Ellen. So that's okay. And I used it last night when I was delivering something.
Well, it's used. It's so in the vernacular now. It's hard not to use it.
It is.
But it was a big change then to move into academia, which is very unlike the business world, but also to have the opportunity to create programming to help women navigate. So I now have this portfolio career that is, you know, an oversight and guidance role on boards, but teaching leadership to leaders who want to go build their career, and then particularly the focus on advancing women. So that was my evolution.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great evolution. And the important part of that too is all of those skills, as you were coming through that corporate space, as you said, in the 80s, you were the only woman in the room. But all of those skills that you're bringing through, it's not just in the education, that you're not just an academic. You've lived it, you've experienced it, and you understand in the real world, which is a lot different than often education that students who are going out in the real world receive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think that sort of being a practitioner, you know, having climbed the ladder and now seeing it from a board perspective and then seeing what, you know, what's going on with, you know, students in their late 20s and how they're different too. So it's interesting to see what's generational, but how much is still very gendered too. And, you know, the intersection of different parts of our, you know, race and orientation and all the other aspects too of people's identities.
I know, yes, and that identity as who you are as a leader is such an important space to be. I know when I was a GM of a business, being in that role, the perception for other people in the role, it takes strength to hold your space to be the leader that you want to be when there's other people in that environment that don't receive that as well because they're not in a position to understand where things are coming from.
Yeah, I am glad that you raised this. I think stepping into that leadership identity can be particularly hard for women. Maybe we have never seen another, you know, someone in our family or someone in our company, and we haven't seen that before. And it is stepping into a bit more authority, or perhaps we're leading someone who once was our peer. Mm. So there's all kinds of things to navigate. And I think it takes a while to almost like believe and step into what is the way that I want to lead. So it's such an interesting thing for women to reflect on and to think, you know, what's the leader I want to be, and what does that look like, and how do I get there?
Definitely. I remember with the company I was with, I was a sales rep and I was studying management. Had the opportunity then to be promoted into that GM role. One partner bought the other partner out, so they needed somebody in that space. We were given travel as part of incentives as a sales rep. And the next time we went on an overseas trip with the same group of people that I'd traveled with, we achieved the same results years before. Their response to me was very, very different, with this expectation that I, or the business, was going to pay for a lot more things than I had been when I was just one of the reps going along on the trip. It was a completely different energy and different space. And they were people that were friends who, I think, they were unsure of where the boundaries were, and I was still in that friend space, and then was shocked with these expectations that came along. It was interesting.
That must have been hard to navigate.
Yeah, it definitely was. And it's really like, well, no, we're not paying for it. It's something. But there was quite a few incidents that went, okay, this is a challenge. And coming back in, finally fully stepping into the role as a leader in the business, it took time. It's okay when the new people came in, because that was who I was, but it took time for the people that I had being friends with, still friends with, but changing that role without trying to manage them, because they were all commission-based sales teams. So they could go and do whatever they liked anyway.
Well, it's so interesting. I think that when we take on a leadership role, others watch us. And, you know, like, it sounds like what you needed to do and what you did in that situation was set a bit of a boundary. And they're looking to, you know, what's this leader going to tolerate? Where are those boundaries? So interesting. And then a little bit of testing you. And I think that happens when we step into leadership. So it's, you know, it's important to, I mean, you were clear on what you wanted, or what was in and out of bounds, which was great.
Yeah.
But must have been hard too.
It was very, very difficult. And their responses to it, they took a while to come to terms with that response as well, which was quite interesting. But there's so many things that do come up. And I mean, men in leadership roles as well, but I just feel with women, it's not necessarily... There's certain people where that's just their normal personality. Then they can step into it and lead. And anyone that's ever done any personality testing will, you know, you can easily identify if that's you. But if I use one that you know, you'll know this one, Ellen, with sanguine, melancholic, phlegmatic, and can't think of the fourth one. But identify as birds, so an eagle, a dove, an owl, and a peacock. It's very hard for dove to step into that leadership role, whereas the eagle just sort of goes full into it without maybe the considerations that the dove might have, but then the dove doesn't achieve the results that the eagle gets. So meaning it's just easier for some people to do it than others, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say easier for sure at first, but there's gifts in each different type, it seems like. But I've just heard of that, what you just described, just recently.
Okay.
So I'm not steeped in it, but I find it fascinating.
Oh, any of the personality profiling things I find really fascinating. And that particular one, just because it's the birds and we can look at we can imagine the peacock. You know, it's let's make friends and look at me. I look amazing. And this is going to be the best outcome ever. We're going to have all these amazing results. Just have a look. Oh, I don't know what steps we need to do. I need an eagle or an owl to figure out the steps to do. And then I need the dove to look after the people along the way. But I've got the ideas.
Yeah. So that's so interesting.
Yeah, it's good fun. And I love being on teams where you've got everyone on that team who, it's very similar to a DISC profile also.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the birds are pretty.
Nice.
But it does make a difference, doesn't it? And I think that is one of the hardest things that I think women find is to say, I need some help. I cannot do all of this by myself. And it's not just in the workplace, which is important in what we're talking about, but it's in the home. I know I have conversations with my sister and she's not doing fine. How are you doing? I'm fine. Do you need me to assist with any? No, I've got it. It's all fine. How do we get women to accept that it's not fine and it's okay to ask for assistance?
I think so often we have grown up seeing women in our family, you know, could be mothers, aunts, sisters, you know, taking it all on. And I think we're like sponges as kids and take on like that's the way it works. And then I think in the workplace too, we think that going it alone is how it works. And we so much need other people, and that, like, you know, to be strong, we need to go it alone, you know, head down, get work done. And it takes more strength in many ways to ask for help, to learn how to delegate or to say, hey, with all these things on my plate, I'm not able to do all of them. Help me to prioritize. That's a tough conversation to have. And then at home, even I would say, to look at everything that we have to do and how do we, you know, divide it or what things do we drop? Because life is just too full in a way as well. So, you know, I think it's getting in touch with like, how are we, what do we really want? You know, what are our priorities and values, and how do we get as close to that as possible? Because I think so often, you know, we hold like a perfection, we need the perfect house and and we probably don't have to do everything. There's a book by Tiffany Dufu called Drop the Ball. And it's about the things at home that we should stop doing when we're in a stage of life that is like so busy, you know, perhaps maybe it's when we have kids or parents that, you know, need us. And, you know, we hit those patches of such a very full life of responsibilities that we have to prioritize for our own sanity and well-being, yep, as well as to do the things we want to do most really well.
That I've written down the name of that book because I think it's so important and important to share. And I know when I was working full-time, I had a cleaner because that just made sense. I'd come home on Friday afternoon and my house would be beautifully clean. I wouldn't have to spend 4 hours on a Saturday trying to do that in amongst racing, you know, the boys to this whatever sport they were participating in at the time. But I had friends that were high pressure jobs, and that's exactly what they would do. Oh no, I can't kind of get someone else to clean. They won't clean as well. Or, oh, how would that look if I'm not doing the cleaning? It's that perception, that outside perception. I just thought it's crazy. You know, you can't. I'm going.
Yeah, I think that, prioritizing where we add the most value, and there's aspects of, it comes up like kids or certain things that like only we can do or we want to do. But I say take the list. What do we want to do? What do we want to delegate or rather hire? Where do we want to divide with other people in our home? And what do we drop? Thanks to Tiffany.
Yeah, I love the divide because I've never added that one. I've always gone do delegate or ditch. And but divide is a great one
Yeah,
also.
I think so often there, other people have coined the term emotional labor of the things that we know. Okay, I got to get tickets for Thanksgiving and I need to get the present for this, this family member, or we need to, pay the taxes or whatever, all those things that we have in our head. It's almost like get everything down on paper. Because sometimes we might have a partner who's not aware of those things, who's willing to do them, but doesn't know, or it's not top of mind. So I think our great ability to multitask and to have so much locked in our heads, if we can get it out and then work on, hey, what can you do? What can I do? What can you start to get your kids as they get older to take on as well and learn some responsibilities? It can help lessen the load on us.
Oh, most definitely. I'm just thinking my husband has no computer skills whatsoever. They used to trial new processes at his work, and they'd give it to him first because he'd break it, and then they would see what needs to be done after that. And he's retired, and I hand over things that he's because he's got a new car, and so he's the things that are involved around the car. Somebody hit it the other day, so he had to organize the insurance part of it, and the new insurance bills come through. So now he's got to check out and see whether he can find a more cost-effective thing. Things like that, which are things I would have just done in the past, but he is very uncomfortable about doing. But he's getting it done, and that's all the lesson. But it's important, and that's about setting boundaries. And I know we talked about a little bit about that, but that and it's all about this how overcoming people pleasing behaviors and in professional and in personal life, which is what we've just been chatting about how to do that. Great
Yeah.
responses. I do like the divide part, and I've got do delegate divide. You got drop. I just ditch it. But it's
Yeah.
That's the thing about leaving emails in your inbox. Eventually, then you'll go, well, it's past the due date, and you can just, it wasn't important anyway.
As long as we don't miss the big things,
No.
but I agree with you. I mean, it's just life is, there's too much incoming at us. So getting a hold of this and sharing it, back to your point about we try to do things on our own and we need to ask for help is so it feels like it's a power skill, for us going forward, or superpower if we're able to do that.
I think so. I was having a shower the other day, washing my hair. The shampoo wasn't funny. I had a whole lot going on in my hair. I just was trying to plan out a whole lot of things. Shampoo wasn't foaming up. And so I put more shampoo in it, still wasn't foaming up. Then realized it wasn't the shampoo, it was the conditioner that I was washing my hair with. And then had to wash that out and then put shampoo in it. And I went, oh, silly girl. I don't talk to myself like that, but I went, oh, well. And then I started shaving my legs, and I had one leg fully done, and I've gone, that's really smooth, and realized the cap was on the razor. That's when I realized there was absolutely too much going on in my head, that I was not present doing something. And that's such an important factor, isn't it, to focus on what you're doing when you're doing it. It was a really good lesson for me to do
Yeah, that's it's sort of like, what are the early warning signs? That's a pretty light, nice one.
Yes.
But those times of like, what happens on our way to feeling burnout too, what are all those little things? But just that moment of like, wow, I'm not even present in this moment. We've all been there. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I made sure I went for a walk this morning before we chatted, because I just wanted to be out in nature for half an hour at least and then come back in the room, because it's important when we're having conversations to be very present in what we're doing. One of the things that we touched on a little bit is that self-promotion. How do we, your suggestions for helping people shift so that you can feel comfortable about promoting yourself, because we're not good at that, doing that. In Australia, I don't know whether you've heard of it, it's tall poppy syndrome. The difference, I'll give you the difference in example, and this is from American friends that I've had. When you buy a new car in America, you'll drive it around the block 5 times and go, "We've got a new car." In Australia, we'll park it in the garage and drop the garage door.
So interesting.
It's very, very
And
different.
so do you see a difference between men and women in Australia?
Not with the tall
Because I
poppy
would
at all.
say,
No.
okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's very, very much there's a very similar sort of space, because someone will call you on it. You don't want that. It's what we have in Australia is a thing called, does it pass the pub test? If you're in a bar and it's the mates, can you get away with it with the pub test?
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Well, this idea of self-promotion, what we see in research is that it's a harder lift, or it's harder for women because they have more negative associations with it. Now, that's more of a US research, but this thinking negatively, and part of it is getting clued into how career planning works in an organization, that the risk, and I in my book, I've identified these five strategies that help us, but they also hurt us. And when we are patiently performing, awaiting to be noticed, and not sharing what our goals are or what we've accomplished, the risk is we could get passed over, and other people can get promoted or get the big projects, and we can feel like we are, like, what about me? And the other part of that risk is perhaps being seen as less ambitious because we have not been vocal. And so we really have to sort of shift our thinking from self-promotion to, this is just part of how you plan careers. And your boss benefits from knowing what your goals are. And if you can have conversations where how are you tracking relative to what you hope happens, what you aspire to in your career, you then know what you need to work on or need to develop, and that you're like on the radar screen. Because if we don't raise up our interests and what we've accomplished, people are too busy that they not necessarily know. And so you want that person to advocate for you for the project or the promotion and all that. So it's a real shift of thinking. I recommend thinking about, what's at stake. In other words, like, what do you want to have happen in your career? And let that sort of guide you to tap into the courage to have some conversations where you're intentionally setting up a conversation about, I'd like to talk about the thing that you want to have happen, and share that. And it's hard when we feel like something negative about saying what we want, but it's part of what other people are doing. Over here, you see a bigger gap, I think, than you described, at least with the tall poppy syndrome, where women are less likely to self-promote because they think it's negative, versus having, men are going in, and I can tell you from managing so many people, men come in with here's why I should be promoted, or here's why I should get that office or get that project so frequently. And for women, we hold back. So we need to understand that And sometimes there's messages that become beliefs that stay with us, like it's like the tall poppy, or my mom, some of the things she said in our household were like, don't be a braggart. And I definitely heard that message, and it gave me a lot of humility, which helps me, but it held me back. So I had to learn this early on. Now, she also said, Ellen, you have to toot your own horn. So I kind of got these mixed messages in a way, and I had to find my way. And I saw other people that I thought I was comparable to, or sometimes even better than, I saw them get promoted. And I really had to get with the program and understand, but my mom didn't work in the business world. And so like, I didn't have role models who clued me in. And so, my hope is we have more allies out there helping us if we don't naturally know that, like, this is a part of how you build your career.
Yes, and that's such an important factor, is that allies and all support. And that's one of the reasons that I do this podcast, is to be able to interview people like yourself who can offer suggestions and ideas. The two things there, you mentioned your book. What's your book called?
Yeah, so my book is The Mirror Door: Break Through the Hidden Barrier That Locks Successful Women in Place.
Oh, I love
And
the title. I
yeah,
love
thank
that
you.
book. Yeah, the mirrored
Thank you.
door.
Yeah,
Yeah,
the
I'm in
mirror.
sales, so I often go, when somebody tells me what they do, I go, well, what does that look like? What you're doing is the mirrored door. Well done with that. You can see it
Thank you.
straight away.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so often we see opportunity and we reflect inward and think we're not ready or worthy. And it's truly most of the time a distorted view. And we busy ourselves doing these other things when all the growth is in taking action. But we are not always socialized and we don't always learn that. So frequently women hold back, whether it's raising our hands in the classroom or going for the promotion or speaking up, like we said earlier about, like, let's divide the work here at home, or here's why I think I could add value to that job that's opened that I'd like to have.
It's interesting with that job. I know the statistics I've read is that women have to be able to have cover 80% of the criteria of a job application before they'll apply, whereas men only have to have 20%, and they'll just go for it anyway.
Yeah, it's this. I think we are socialized early on to cooperate and to really need certainty and to, be the good girl and, so many things that stay with us as adults. And a lot of times the way boys socialize, or so the research says, is much more of one-upmanship, move into action before you're ready. And I think that helps them to say, I have two of those skills. I got this. Whereas w women are like, oh, I don't know, 10 of, I have, 9 of 10, and I'm just not sure. Yeah.
Definitely. And our conversation, the pub test and everything, but there is that one-upmanship definitely with the men. It and they can BS their way through that as much as they'd like. But that's, again, that reinforces that bravado, because what you believe, what you perceive, you will project.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with new jobs, new like a promotion, we don't already know how to do it. We have the potential to do it. And yeah, they might BS their way through, but they're going for it. I think they see that I can probably do that, and they probably go in with more confidence to do that. And I think that we think I only want to do it if I can be really certain I've got it, like on day one. So I think there's a real opportunity to push ourselves to especially, other people can see our potential. So sometimes we need to do more of a reality check. Like,
Absolutely.
maybe
That's a
I'm just
great
as ready.
perspective. That is a really good perspective, is that, well, the reason you're going for a position is to learn something new and to step
Yeah.
up, which means you won't be able to do everything when you step into that role or applying for it because of it is a step up or a different type of role. And that's what expands you as your capacity and you as a person. And I love when you're talking about planning your career. And we put more time and energy in planning our holidays than we do yes. in planning our career.
It's crazy.
Yeah, truly. And because I work with small business owners, a lot of them don't put the planning in place. I teach planning and goal setting, visions and mission statement, because when you've got that in place, it gives you a direction at least where to go. But they don't necessarily have those plans or written goals, where they want to go, what they want to achieve. And asking that question is, what does your business look like in the future? It's, I don't know. I'm just doing what I'm doing because I'm a good technician at doing this.
Yeah, and I love the work that you do because I think it's so important to set that vision. I think you're going to get further down the road when you do that, even though you might take a different route and the vision might change. But without that, my fear is that you could get stuck in place.
Yeah.
So it's so you're helping people in such an important way for their business.
And it's not something that just sort of dawned on me one day. It's the reading, it's the learning from people who have more skills and more knowledge or more experiences, or it triggers something that you go, this is so important. So now I can share that with the people coming through how important the particular thing is as you're doing in your teachings and writings and everything. I'm thinking of my vision statement is to enable people to do what they don't believe is possible. So that's what I do every day. It's easy. There's a mission statement with more details and purpose and things like that. But having a mission statement that is clear, then nothing, well, you sometimes get distracted, but is this on mission? Yeah, it is. Or on vision, it is, because it may be a sidetrack, but it's still, if I can do that and help that by learning those skills myself, well, then I'll do that. Or step on a board or as well. That's why, for me, it's such a critical component. And I think anyone moving into a woman moving into a leadership role is what is it? What, and you mentioned your values before. It's all got to resonate around that, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it can be, there's all those, you know, the North Star or, you know, like all those things. But I do think whichever phrase you use for whatever the vision and values that you have, it does guide you, you know, when you have different choices or, you know, getting back in touch with why you're doing what you're doing is a really helpful thing to do when you get off track or, you know, you get overwhelmed or all those kinds of things. It helps us get back on the track that we hope to be on.
Yes, it's, and you know what? I found that then when I've had jobs that or done things that weren't on that track, I didn't enjoy them. They weren't things that rated high with my values. And your values change over time with children and family. You know, I would have said, my son turns 40 this year. So I would have said, 35 years ago, definitely family is the highest part of my values. It's still in my top five, but it's not the priority on an everyday basis sort of thing now because it's grandchildren. It's, you know, we love them more than our children, of course, but that's a different space that we know what we don't. We just, my definition is I love my children. I'm in love with my grandchildren. It's just a different space. But you know what I mean? The values change over time and the priorities change over time, but they still fit within those usually the top five things. And if you're doing those and they're important to you, you'll love what you do. If you're struggling and you're against a wall, it's because you are not within that space, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, bringing awareness to them helps you to make choices that fit with that. We spend so much time working if we can do it in ways that are really aligned with that vision and value, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's always the things that we have to do that, you know, aren't feeling very, you know, visionary or value oriented, but hopefully we can shrink the percentage of time spent doing that as well.
And then one of mine is new adventures. So while I was sitting in that GM role, and the last couple of years where things were moving and shifting differently and other people had come into the workforce, which made it even less fun, that my screensaver was always my next holiday. That gave me the purpose of being there. That's high on my values. Yeah. I can do what I'm doing because here's the resources and funding for that holiday. We have very, very generous holidays here with 4 weeks a year, and I've done about 10 public holidays a year that are fully paid, and also a super long service leave. So after 10 years, you start getting quite a few weeks. And I was in this role for 20 years and I didn't have a single day left. Not a single, I'd taken every single day that, never sick, but always took all the days that I was entitled to, because that was high on the values, is not sitting in the office.
That's great.
It all comes back to that space, doesn't it? I think we could chat for hours. There's so much synchronicity and commonality here. And I love what you're doing. I think it's such an important space in the world. But we always finish with three takeaways. So out of all of the discussion that we've had, or points that we may have not even brought up yet, what do you want people to take away, Ellen?
That we are more ready than we realize. You know, women are more ready than we realize, and that sometimes this instinctive reaction that we're not, is something we have to, you know, recognize and get past. Something I didn't say, but you know, I think we got to tap into our courage. I have a lot of women come to me, students and, you know, coaching clients of like, I'm looking for confidence. And, you know, my belief is that women have so much courage, and that's what we have to tap into to move into action. And that confidence is really the outcome. So courage is the prerequisite, but we get the confidence after we've taken action and, you know, have won or lost and, you know, stumbled and got back up again. And then my last point was just, this is a bit around, you know, who we are as strengths and values, but like run your own race in the sense of, you know, do things your way, go after the career that, you know, fits who you are, I think is just so important, versus, you know, what other people think you'd be good at, or perhaps, you know, you got a message, you know, somewhere in your growing up of you should do this. And I just think we spend a lot of time at work. And so doing, it's such a gift to do work that you love to do. I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do that. For sure now in my career, and glad I was able to get there.
It's a lovely space to be in, and I encourage, even if it's not in your first 10 years of work, it's, again, what does it look like? What does the future look like for you? And things, as you said, you didn't expect to go into academia, but it changed, and that was where you've slotted in very nicely, and not listening to those other voices. I work with people with confidence and courage. I'm so glad we've brought up that word, because it's such an important factor. It takes courage to, if you're a perfectionist, to let things go. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage to step out of your learning and beliefs that you've had through your childhood and you've taken with you because you own them now, and then to go, well, that's not going to work for me, I'm going to do something different. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to speak up and say this is acceptable or not acceptable.
Yeah, it's sort of the thing we need for all of these, you know, setting boundaries, asking for help, all of those things, taking care of ourselves, going on the vacations. It may not take as much courage in a culture that really cherishes that, but it's hard to be out and to really,
Definitely. No, wonderful.
adoring that.
How can people get in touch with you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. My website is ellentaife.com. And my book is The Mirror Door, Breakthrough the Hidden Barrier That Locks Successful Women in Place. And it's available across retailers.
And I'm sure that would be high value listening to you speak today, that the book will be of value to anyone who is looking at how that they can provide themselves with better, more opportunities as leaders. Or like, yeah, let's
Absolutely,
buy it.
absolutely.
Go and get it. Find it out there. And I'll have all of the information, links and course notes and everything in the course notes, in the show notes as well. So thank you so much, Ellen. It's nighttime for you, morning for me here in Australia. It's always interesting when I've got my American guests. We usually figure this works out well. I really do appreciate all that you've had to offer on the show today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for having me.
Most welcome. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember to leave comments. I've had some people comment to me lately. I met a lady when on my travels who was about 1,000 kilometers from where I live, in a little tiny town in outback Queensland, who, when she said something came up with the We Are Women, she said, "Oh, I listened to that podcast." And I said, "It's my podcast." And she's done the whole fangirl thing. And she said, "It's changed my life. I've made decisions to be here. It's created this wonderful life for me. I'm going to get all emotional because of listening to you and your guests on your podcast." But please, that was one of the most amazing things I could hear. Have you got any comments, anything that pops up for you? I would love to know. I'd love to view them, share them with me on your comments. Whatever, however you listen to this, or whether you watch it through the YouTube videos. So, thank you for joining us. I look forward to you joining again for the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.